Morning, everyone. The reading today is Psalm 13. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death, and my enemy will say, I've overcome him. And my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me.
Thanks, Sally. Please turn to your neighbour and just share what stood out to you.
Cool. So what stood out from the reading? You, Sally, what was that? How long? Yeah, how long must I wait? Yeah. Others? Yeah?
Wrestling with thoughts.
Yeah, the battle of our mind. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that today. Yeah.
God isn't always obvious.
Yeah, I like that. Yep, that's good. Others? Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Choosing to trust in God is a choice. And what was this, the last bit you said, sorry?
But I will
trust in God. Yeah, yeah, David says that. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Tina? Leaning on the Lord, yeah, absolutely. In the dark times, eh? That's what I'm talking about today. Last one, Tim.
It's sort of like everyone is against me, but God will never be against me.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Everyone is against me, but God will never be against me. I love that. Cool. So, some of you guys may know this already, but I grew up in a military family as the eldest son. And what that meant was that for large chunks of my childhood, my dad was away in some of the most dangerous places in the world, doing some of the most dangerous jobs in the world, minesweeping and disarming in places that had conflict. And what that meant was, when I was at home, I was home with my mum and my two younger siblings, and I had to learn to grow up really fast to help mum at the home, while also being aware of where my dad was. All right? The most memorable of these trips was when I was 12, when my dad went away to Afghanistan. And what ended up being, that was for 9 months, if you include the training for it beforehand. And I remember we would only get 5 minutes a week to call him, if it was even possible at the time. And by month five, I remember sitting in my bed and trying to remember what my dad's face looked like, and I couldn't remember. And I remember weeping and crying myself to sleep that night. And then around about that same time, I have a memory of comforting my mum, hiding in the closet because my brother and sister aren't coping anymore, and she isn't coping because that day, that phone call that we got, Dad got shot at. And the day before, he nearly stood on a landmine. Right? I knew that I had nearly lost my dad, and yet I was having to be in a place where I had to comfort my family. Right? The pain I experienced in this season of my life would go on to shape my life for the next decade. Right? And I'll unpack this more as I go, but I just wanted to start with that and start by saying every single one of us in this room, if we had a chance to share, would have stories of suffering and emotional pain. It finds all of us. It is inevitable that as we go through life, we experience suffering. But suffering isn't really the most glamorous of topics. We don't really like to talk about it, but we need to. We need to, because left undealt with, it accumulates in our soul. It piles up as we go about life and we start reliving it in our past and in our present. Our unhealed emotional pain then begins to sabotage us from being formed into people of love. And so the question is, when pain and suffering come knocking on our door, what are we going to do? So I'm going to talk first about what does the world do, and then what does Jesus invite us to do? Okay? Cool. So the modern world, surprise, surprise, doesn't really know what to do with pain and suffering in a healthy way. It doesn't know how to deal with it. And so it has three main methods that I think we all fall into one of, if not all three. I fall into all three all the time. The first thing that the world tells us to do is to deny the pain, to convince ourselves that there's really no problem happening at all, right? In a sense, we're gaslighting ourselves to think that it isn't there. And I actually see it quite often in Christian circles as well, except we use different language. We change this to being, well, I'm just having more faith. Do you know what I mean? We say, oh, you know, I'm not really suffering. I'm going to have more faith and it's all going to be okay. And there's an element of truth to that. But what we do when we do it in that way is it allows us to sidestep any emotional pain, emotional distress or psychological wounds or any personal development that God might be calling us into. And what we're doing is we're co-opting the message of hope that the gospel is, and we're turning it into a message of pain denial. All right? So, pain, emotional pain, physical pain, it serves a purpose. Its purpose is to draw attention to something that is seriously wrong, that needs healing. Right? If we ignore our physical pain, what does that do? Well, it leads to the potential for long-term lasting damage in the body and potentially even death, right? It's the same with our emotional pain. Ignoring it always has destructive consequences for ourselves, but also for those around us. In my case, back to the story that I was showing, I would deny my emotional pain of my dad not being around by telling myself a different story, that I was just proud of him for going and saving people by removing mines. And I did this because then I didn't have to acknowledge my loneliness or the fact that I missed him or the fact that I had told myself a story that he didn't really want to be around me. That story wasn't true, I just want to say, but when you're 12, you can't process that and you can't understand that. Okay? So that's the first one. We deny the pain. The second thing that the world tells us to do is to detach from the pain. So this is where you disconnect. Some of us can do this, some of us can't, but when we disconnect our feelings from the situation and we choose to ignore the feelings and just go, oh, that's the situation. The problem is that your body lacks nuance, your mind lacks nuance. You cannot say, I'm going to detach from these emotions and not these emotions. You can either detach from all emotions or not. And so when you detach from your emotional pain and your suffering, you detach from all the emotions. So you lose, yes, the sadness and what have you, but you also lose the joy, you lose the hope, and you become numb inside. This is the one where I most commonly go. And I remember chatting with Caleb one time, quite early on when I moved in, about how I didn't know what emotions felt like. I couldn't recognize them. And I felt, as I described, numb. And as we dive deeper, I realized that I had this unresolved hurt around my dad being away so much as a kid. Right? I knew that he was away, but I had detached myself from how it had made me feel. And the result was that I struggled to meaningfully connect with people for over a decade. I couldn't go deep because I didn't know how I felt. So we deny, we detach, and the last one is we drug. We drug away our pain, and this is the most popular, I think, in the world. I mean, this is literally, so you know, drugs, alcohol, cannabis, pain meds, but also figuratively. And as John Mark Comey, he describes it as the cultural drugs of our time, that being work, sex, romance, social media, entertainment, or eating, right? Right? Anything that is used to distract us from our pain. But the problem is if it's distracting us from our pain, it doesn't just distract us from our pain, it distracts us from other things, including God. Right? So when we take to drugging our pain, it actually works for a moment. Momentarily, it works. It gives us some relief. But like with all drugs, there's a side effect. And that side effect is, because we're not actually dealing with the issue, our anxiety and our sadness get worse and worse and worse over time. I need to add a caveat here at this point. What I'm not talking about is specific medication that targets anxiety and depression in the presence of professionals. They have a place, particularly if the emotions are so overwhelming that you can't process them. It helps quiet them down so you can work on your inner world with God and with others. I'm not talking about that. What I am talking about is we find ways to distract ourselves from our pain. You guys following so far? Cool. There's an overlying assumption in all of these things, you know, the deny, the detach, and the drug or distract, which is that pain and suffering are inherently things to be avoided at all costs. They have no value whatsoever. That's the assumption of the world, and so we find ways to escape from it. Jesus invites us, however, into a different way of being. Instead of avoiding our pain, Jesus says, come and meet me in the pain. And I think this is really clear, actually, in Matthew 26, 36 to 46, the story of the Garden of Gethsemane. This is the day before he's about to be crucified on the cross to suffer more suffering than we're ever going to experience, right? And what we don't see him doing is denying the pain by just going, well, I'll just have more faith. I'll just hope in God. It's going to be fine. It's not going to be a problem, right? He doesn't do that. He doesn't detach from it either. He doesn't go, well, it'll be what it'll be. I'm not really feeling anything about it, right? He certainly doesn't just go and hit the town with his disciples and drink the night away to, you know, ignore the problem, right? He doesn't do that. Instead, he very intentionally gathers his disciples, asks them to pray for him, and carves out time to allow the emotions to come to the surface and sits in it. You know, verse 37, it says, he got his disciples to pray, he went forward, and then he began to feel agitated and grieved. He made space. And then he goes a little bit further and he throws himself to the floor and begs God to take this cup from him. He's giving all of his emotions, all of what's going on in his head, over to God and letting him in. What Jesus is doing here is the practice of lament. Lament is the process of deliberately sitting in our pain and in our suffering and acknowledging it for what it is without sugarcoating it. It is a practice that I think the Western church has lost. But we need to find it again because it is of critical importance to our spiritual health. To be spiritually healthy, however, you must be emotionally healthy. This does not mean you're always happy, but what it does mean is that you are aware of your thoughts and your emotions, but they don't captivate you. You can process them before God and you prevent them then from forming you into acting in unloving ways. And so over these past few weeks, we've been diving into practicing the way and taking on practices. Or during Lent, you may have carved out specific time to spend with God. And for some of us, we would have had amazing moments where we're sitting in the presence of God in this place. But my guess is that for most of us, at least some point in that moment, what happened when we carved out space to spend time with Jesus, we found pain, anger, and bitterness and emotional distress come up. Is that just me? I have had that, right? It feels counterintuitive, but I think it's really common. Because when we slow down and make space, all the stuff that we've been burying and keeping at bay comes flooding to the surface. Right? I love there's this quote, which you'll see in the video if you're in a small group, from a guy called Thomas Keating. It says, "When we commit ourselves to the spiritual journey, the first thing the spirit does is start removing the emotional junk of a lifetime that is inside of us." That's right, Diane. The practices, they make time for that pain of a lifetime to come to the surface. For me, that was childhood pains from like 15, 20 years ago. For others, it may be that as well, but it also includes the thing your coworker said last week, right? What it does is it allows these things to come out of the shadows and into the light. And when it's in the light, that's when God can start working on it. But if we leave it unhealed, if we don't bring it into the light, this unresolved emotional pain and suffering will sabotage your spiritual formation into people of love. It will. If we allow hurt, anger, and bitterness and fear to fester inside of us, it will undermine our best intentions to become like Jesus, and it will damage all of the relationships around us. Therefore, to become emotionally healthy, to be more like Jesus, we need to journey our emotional pain with God and with others. We need to. And we do that through our practices that expose our soul to God and to others. This actually includes friendship as a practice, and I don't want this to be an underrated practice. All right? When we make space to process our pain with God and our community, it begins to transform us. Now, we wish that process was fast. It's not, I'm sorry to tell you. It's really, really slow, but it is actually the container for your formation. Pain and suffering are inevitable in our lives, and there is no version of your life where you do not feel emotional pain. But the good news of the gospel is that this is not the end to our story. I love a song that I can't remember the name of it, but it's got this line and it says, "The story isn't over if the story isn't good." Love that line, right? The kingdom of God is here, and therefore all will be overcome by Jesus, and our pain is no longer meaningless. Without him it is, but with him it is no longer meaningless. Therefore, the very pain and suffering that can sabotage our spiritual formation can, in God's hands, be the key to our transformation. I love the way James puts this in his book, letter called James. He says this, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance." And this is my favorite bit. "Let perseverance finish its work, that so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything." Oh, how I wish to be mature, complete, and not lacking in anything. And James is telling me the secret to that is to meet God in my suffering, not run from it. All right? I want to add another caveat here. What I am not talking about is that God causes pain and suffering in your life. I want to make that very clear. He does not cause evil or disease to happen in us. All right? It is not God's will that your loved one or yourself got cancer or that car crashed happened. It's not God's will. And the reality is the world is so broken enough already, he doesn't need to cause these things to happen. It will come and find you anyway. All right? But what I am saying is that God does take this brokenness, this pain in our lives, the suffering, and works with it and redeems it for good and for our spiritual growth. This is the capacity of our God. This is the capability of our God. I love at the end of Genesis, where Joseph is with his brothers, and they're realizing, shoot, when we chucked him into the well and sold him off to slavery, that was a horrible thing. And Joseph says, don't worry, you intended this for evil, but God was able to use it for good. Right? Therefore, the very pain we want to deny, to detach from, and to drug is the very pathway to transformation. But we need to step in and meet God in our pain. You guys tracking? Cool. Finally, I want to take a look at Psalm 13, our reading today. Because I think it has a structure that's really helpful when we're stepping into this place of bringing our pain and suffering to God. And what I find is when we're approaching God in prayer about these things, often we start with praising Him, right? We praise Him, but actually sometimes that's appropriate, but sometimes I wonder if it's kind of like we're buttering God up before we start talking about what we really want to talk about, you know, if I can just, give you the right praise, then you're going to be good with me. And then when we finally get to talking about God, how what's really going on inside, we soften it because we're afraid of what He's going to be like, or we don't really want to face it ourselves, and we don't really want to use the language we really want to use to describe it, eh? I'm guilty of this all the time, right? But the psalm we saw today is the complete opposite. David begins in a place of radical honesty about where he's at. Could you chuck it back up on the slide, Asher? I just want to highlight one word. Where is it? The second verse, how long must I wrestle with the thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? That's his opening statements, right? If we are to meaningfully engage with God and our suffering, we need to begin by being in a place of being honest about Him, about where we're at, and not sugarcoating it. The next thing we see David do, however, is he petitions to God to look on me and answer, oh my God. Right? He is asking God to do something about it after he hears him. And I think sometimes we're afraid to ask God about what we really, really need and ask Him to come draw close. Because sometimes I think we're afraid if we ask Him to draw close in these moments, we're afraid that what is He going to do? He's just going to tell us off, or He won't really draw close. But we've got a good Father, and He loves us, and He wants nothing more than to see us made whole and to have an intimate relationship with Him. So ask, as David does. And then finally, David praises God as he is transformed in his suffering. When we start this way around, starting with radical honesty and drawing close to God in that, it naturally leads us to praise. You guys follow him? Cool. So I want to go back now to my story, which you may find helpful as an example, about how I detached from the emotional pain of my dad being away so much as a kid. And Caleb helped me see that I wasn't being honest with God about how I was really feeling about that, about this wound that I had experienced. And so with his help, I sat with God and I started to unpack how I really was with God, and I began to grieve. And it was the first time after over a decade I had invited God in. And what happened, it was a slow journey, but from that moment, God began to undo a multitude of stories that had come out from this moment and untangling it all and dealing with the pain. And suddenly I began to feel again. I remember crying for the first time in over a decade. But then also, I began to feel happiness and joy, and I started getting more excited about things. It was honestly like coming alive again. It was incredible. It also meant that I was finally able to express with my dad how I was feeling and what was going on. And what happened is my relationship with him became incredibly deep. I honestly love him to bits. He is an amazing man, and there is a reason why my son's middle name is called Carl after him. I love him. He's amazing. But I don't think that would have been possible without God's transformation, without me letting him into this pain. And so I'm so blown away by the transformation that God brought in me through me diving into this pain and suffering. I attribute most of the transformation that God has done to me over these past 6 years to this, to me leaning in. And I know that he has the same freedom waiting for you if you're willing to be brave and to trust and to be honest with God too. And so talking about this may have brought up for you stuff that you haven't faced in a long time or that you feel is too overwhelming to face. And if that's you and you would like help in meeting with God, at the end of the service we have a prayer ministry team who will be here to help with that. I pray you lean in and be honest with God. He has got so much freedom and transformation waiting for you. I pray you take that opportunity. Let me pray. God, we are so broken. We have so many wounds. We have so much suffering in our lives. And we need you. We need you to step in. Help us be honest about where we're at with you. And we pray that you help us as we step in. If you could take it, Lord, and use it for our transformation. Take it, Lord, and redeem us and make us into the full, whole human beings that you have designed us to be. Thank you that you desire our freedom so much that you are willing to do everything it takes to get it. We love you, Lord. Amen.